Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on Introduction to the New Exchange Admin Interface. My name is Robin McManus. Let's start the session by going into detail on exactly what we will be covering. In this session, we're going to focus on using the new Exchange Management Console. We'll start with an overview on the differences between this new interface and the old Exchange System Manager. We'll then look at how to manage different aspects of the system with the new console, starting with recipients, then servers, and the organization, using transport rules and so forth. We'll spend some time looking at the new toolbox, which includes the Queue Viewer and the Best Practice Analyzer. Along the way, we'll see lots of great demonstrations. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Here's a brief overview of what would be helpful, but not essential for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. It would be helpful to have some IT administration experience with Microsoft Exchange Server 2003, Exchange 2000 Server, or Exchange Server 5.5. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. First, we'll go through an overview of where everything is in the console before we start to look at specific areas of management: recipients, servers, the organization, and the toolbox. Before we start the session, let's take a look at the management model in Exchange Server 2007 and see where the console fits in. When the Exchange product group set about designing the new management console interface, they wanted to provide consistency across the management toolset. This includes the management console, the management shell, which we'll discuss shortly, and the EX setup command. The things that get configured whenever you make administrative changes in Exchange include the Exchange store, the registry, and Active Directory. At the heart of everything is the management engine, which is driven by Windows PowerShell commands, or CMD lets. Command line programs like the shell and EX setup tap directly into this engine. Whereas when you use Exchange Management Console, your actions are processed by WinForms and the PowerShell data provider before being passed to the PowerShell engine. The important thing to remember here is however you choose to administer the system from the command line using the shell or from a wizard in the console, you're actually executing the same PowerShell commands. This consistency makes the system powerful and extensible. So in essence, it doesn't make much difference whether you choose to use the new Exchange Management Console or the shell, as beneath the surface, the shell is doing all the work. Let's quickly talk about the shell. The shell, known as PowerShell, has been provided to make your lives easier. The shell can accomplish all the tasks that the console can, but it's more suited to the bulk administrative tasks that you perform. A GUI-based administration tool, like the Exchange Management Console, is great for ad hoc administrative tasks, but is not ideally suited to repetitive tasks. This situation is where the Exchange Management Shell is helpful. Based on the Microsoft Windows Server PowerShell technology, it builds on the operations that are only available in the Exchange Management Console and extends your administrative capabilities. Some things can only be achieved through the shell. Unix administrators will be familiar with the term shell. A shell provides a powerful, flexible, and scriptable command line experience that allows you to perform any administrative task that you can perform using the console. The difference between using the shell and the console is that the shell is ideally suited to repetitive tasks. PowerShell is not a text-based shell, but instead uses an object model based on the Microsoft .NET platform. It has a substantial number of built-in commands that provides you with a powerful toolset for script-based administration. The shell is ideally suited to performing repetitive bulk operations. If you have to create mailboxes for 1,000 user accounts, the Exchange Management Console process would be slow and tedious, but you can achieve the same objective with a few simple commands. And if you save these commands to a file, you can reuse your scripts later. For those of you interested in finding out more about the shell, please sign up for TechNet session IT Pro EXC 104, which covers using the Exchange Management Shell. Now let's return to the agenda. In this first part of the session, we'll look at the basic structure of the console and work out how to navigate its simple hierarchy. First, let's compare the console to the old Exchange System Manager. Anyone who has ever managed an Exchange server will have seen the Exchange System Manager. As Exchange has grown from versions Exchange 4 to Exchange Server 2003, the Exchange System Manager has gotten more complicated, and the hierarchy has gotten deeper and deeper, making it harder to locate the things you need. Product Group felt it was time for a change, and while reworking the under-the-hood stuff, they took the opportunity to rework the interface too. The first thing that you'll notice when you use Exchange is the clean interface. The navigation hierarchy is now called the console tree. Things are grouped logically into four work centres. The recipient configuration work centre, which contains all the recipient objects like mailboxes, contacts and distribution groups. The server configuration work centre, which groups servers by role, bridgehead, client access, mailbox and unified messaging. The organisation configuration work centre, from which you can administer organisational settings like transport rules, mailbox folders, and unified messaging dial plans and IP gateways, and finally, the toolbox, which contains shortcuts to start useful tools, like the best practice analyzer or the queue viewer. During the session, we'll take a good look at each of these work centres in turn. As you select items in the console tree, the results pane updates. For example, because the mailbox role is selected in the server configuration work centre, the result pane is listing all the servers that host the role. The work pane reflects the item in the result pane. In this case, the child objects of the mailbox server role. The action pane allows you to perform an administrative action on the objects selected in either of the result or work panes. You can also access the same actions from the right-click menu of many items. Let's look at these two interfaces side by side. In the new navigation tree, things are grouped logically, and less clutter means you can locate what you're looking for quickly. One of the nice things about the new console is that it remembers where you were. This is a real time saver now that you no longer have to navigate back to where you were before. And although the console is based on MMC 3.0, it supports the addition of snap-ins from both MMC 3 and MMC 2. They coexist quite happily, which means you can still build your favourite tool. It also supports the MMC New Window From Here command, which allows the administrator to limit what is displayed. For example, a help desk administrator only needs to see the recipient configuration work centre node and no other nodes. These improvements allow you to quickly pick up where you left off and reduce confusion for low-level administrators. Both the server and the recipient configuration work centres can filter objects. Every column that is filterable is viewable with customizable columns. In addition, recipient result size is 1,000 by default, but this can be changed. There is support for up to 10 expressions. Operators include, but not limited to, equals, does not equals, contain, does not contain, and so on. Also both and or operators are supported. And is supported by default, while or is obtained by having two consecutive expressions with the same field. Subsequent expressions are and. The filtering allows you to see only the objects that you care about administering. A subset of objects can always be preserved by using the save filter option, so you can get the same object list time and again without rebuilding the expressions in the filter. In addition, filter coupled with result size can obtain all similar objects with minimal performance impact. This filtering is going to make your use of the console even easier. New object pickers provide a simplified experience with instant results. Pickers are scoped to provide results for the right object types, with search for single entries, filter by column, and customizable columns. The Exchange Management Console sports some new wizards, with a Windows Vista-style look. New actions use wizards along with most other actions. The wizard has a navigation bar that helps track where you are in the process. Both the console and setup program share the same wizard class to help you provide commonality. In addition, the wizard provides shell commandlet syntax in the wizard completion pane. This can be copied and pasted to the shell. The benefits of the pickers and wizards improvements are that you can easily select the right object type. Wizard usage makes object creation straightforward and easy, and being able to pass the underlying commands into the shell helps reduce the time required to learn the basics of PowerShell. Let's talk about using the new pickers. When you go to select an object using the 2003 picker, you have to enter the name of the object, or your best guess, in a box. To search using the picker, you need to click a few buttons to get a list up. Time-wasting effort. So with 2007, you get a list straight away, a minor but in some ways significant change. Let's take a look at the wizard next. The Move Mailbox wizard, like most wizards, display a summary screen right before you perform the selected action. It allows you to be sure you're ready to proceed. It's a bit like the What If parameter on the shell. There's a navigation bar on the left and a new Windows Vista-like look to the interface. Now let's take a more detailed look at the four work centers before our first demo. As we've seen, the console tree is broken into four work centers. The Recipient Configuration Work Center contains a list of recipient objects within the selected context. You use the results pane to filter the recipients by display name or alias. You use the action pane to change the scope of the result to display recipients from a specified domain, rather than from the global address list, GAL. You can manage recipient objects by using the action pane or by right-clicking a recipient in the results pane. The Server Configuration Work Center contains a list of Exchange servers within your organization. The action pane exposes different administrative tasks based on the roles hosted by a particular server. Beneath the server configuration container, the console tree displays servers by role. When you select a particular server from one of these role containers in the results pane, you can select child items in the work pane. For example, when you select the mailbox container in the console tree and click on a server in the results pane, you can see the server's storage groups and stores in the work pane. You can manage the server or its stores by using the administrative tasks in the action pane. The Organization Configuration Work Center contains objects that have an organizational scope. For example, if you select the Organization Configuration folder from the console tree, the results pane displays mailbox, client access, hub transport, and unified messaging objects. If you select one of these objects, the work pane displays relevant child objects. For example, when you select the hub transport object in the results pane, the work pane a tabbed dialog which provides access to the journaling, edge subscriptions, send containers, email policies and transport rules. The toolbox contains 8 tools. The first tool is the Best Practice Analyzer, a WSN-driven tool that checks your Exchange server configuration. To help with database problems, the toolbox contains the Database Recovery Management tool, the Database Troubleshooter. For managing mail flow problems, the toolbox contains the Exchange Queue Viewer, the Message Tracking tool and the Mail Flow Troubleshooter. Beneath these other tools, there are two for managing and monitoring server performance, the Exchange Server Performance Monitor and the Performance Troubleshooter. Now let's run through the first demo, a quick review of the console. In this first demonstration, we'll see where everything is in the console. Because of a complex navigation tree, overdependence on context menus, and the lack of integrated recipient management, the Exchange System Manager in Exchange 2003 and earlier versions is not as efficient as it could be. In this demo, you will see some of the usability enhancements that have been made to the new Exchange Management Console in Exchange 2007 that makes it more productive for administrators. The Exchange Management Console is comprised of four areas: the console tree, the results pane, the work pane, and the action pane. The console tree has been simplified from 8 levels deep to 3 levels deep, with items logically grouped. Under servers, the modular architecture allows specific servers to be installed and managed on a server, which in turn allows the administrator to create specialized servers, such as in the client access-only server. A toolbox has been added where helpful diagnostics and reporting tools, such as Exchange Best Practice Analyzer, can easily be located and started. You'll notice that as you navigate within the console tree, the results pane is updated to reflect your position in the hierarchy. And as you select an item from the results pane, the work pane and the action panes update to reflect this. Let's return to the agenda. This section describes how to administer recipients in Exchange Server 2007 by using the Exchange Management Console. We'll concentrate on the basic tasks for creating and administering mailboxes. The Recipient Configuration Work Center supports both domain-wide and forest-wide scoping. This allows you to look for recipients in your local domain or anywhere in the organization. This is a particular benefit if you only have administrative responsibility for a part of the forest rather than the whole. The domain scope is the default behavior and is determined by the domain in which the server is a member. This means that only recipients in the selected domain can be found or displayed. Reference recipients, such as members, delegates, owners, and managers, are exempt from this restriction. The forest scope can display and find all recipients within the forest, which provides a complete view of the GAL. In addition, the result size is limited to 1,000, but if needed, you can override the setting. By default, the console uses the same list of global catalogue servers and domain controllers that the installed Exchange services use. This reduces issues related to replication. These improvements allow you to see only the objects you want to administer and reduce the performance impact on both server and client running the console. Before we run our next demo, let's have a look at the procedure for managing recipients. We'll keep the discussion fairly light, but if you want more information on managing recipients, please sign up for TechNext session IT Pro EXC 106. To enable a mailbox for a user, you must first create the user account. To create a user account, you can either use the Active Directory Users and Computers tool or the dsadd command from the command line. When you run the new user wizard from within Active Directory Users and Computers, you may be prompted to complete the process by creating a mailbox. Depending on what services are installed in the local server, it is important that you don't do this, but instead perform this part of the process using either the console or the PowerShell. To use the Exchange Management Console to create Exchange Server recipients, use the Recipient Configuration Work Center. It's important to note that you can only create mailbox objects from the Exchange Management Console. To create or manage contacts and distribution lists, you must use the Exchange Management Shell. If you create a new mailbox store or add a mailbox server to your organization, you may want to move mailboxes to the new store. To do this, you can use the Exchange Management Console's Move Mailbox Wizard, or use the Move Mailbox command in the Exchange Management Shell. To move multiple mailboxes by using the Exchange Management Console, select multiple mailboxes in the Recipient Configuration Work Center, and then use the Move Mailbox Wizard. You can't move contacts or distribution lists because they don't have a mailbox. For further information on the shell, sign up for TechNext session IT Pro EXC 104. Now let's look at this in practice. In this demonstration, we'll use a wizard to create and manage recipient objects. First, let's look at creating and managing mailboxes. To create the degree of separation between Active Directory and Exchange Server Administration that some administrators want or need, there are two ways to create a mailbox. The new mailbox command creates a new mailbox and the associated Active Directory account, while the enable mailbox command adds the Exchange-specific attributes to an existing Active Directory user account. Let's start with a look at the former, enabling a mailbox for an existing user account. We want to create a standard user mailbox. Let's locate the user account, in this case, Mike Nash. Nothing to change on the mailbox settings page, so let's click Next. We then confirm the settings. The underlying shell command is displayed on the completion page. You will notice that the enable mailbox command was used to create Mike's mailbox. Now let's create another mailbox using the new mailbox command. This time we need select new user. A dialog box appears into which we need to provide information. First, we put our user's account into the correct OU, sales. The first name is Kari. The last name is Heinzen. The logger name is Heinzen K. We enter the usual password. Now let's move on. We don't need to change defaults for the mailbox settings. Again, we confirm our selections. The underlying script used the new mailbox command. When you use the new mailbox or enable mailbox commands, you need to know what parameter to specify. The way that the console shows you what it did is helpful in getting up to speed with the shell. You can even cut and paste the whole lot into the shell. Let's make a mental note of the following required parameter, which we'll see in the next part of the demo database. When you create a mailbox, you must specify where the mailbox is stored. Okay, let's complete that process. In this next part of the demonstration, I want you to move a block of mailboxes from one store to another. First, I want to know which mailboxes are in the primary database. We can use a filter in the results pane to determine that. Now let's create the filter, in this case based on database. That still gives quite a lot of mailboxes. I want a subset of those, so let's apply an additional filter. Now let's move these mailboxes. Let's select them all and launch the Move Mailbox wizard. Then we simply select the mailbox we want to move them to and click Next. We'll just accept the defaults as we proceed through the wizard. The move operation has started and it will take a few moments to complete. OK, that's completed. You'll notice that the list of recipients is black because of the filters. Let's remove the filters now. Let's move on to talk about the distribution groups. In this segment, we'll look at creating distribution groups, formerly known as distribution lists in earlier versions of Exchange. We'll start with a simple distribution group for a universal distribution group that already exists in Active Directory. In essence, we're mail-enabling the group. As with other recipient types, if you had administrative permissions in both Active Directory and Exchange Server, you can create the group and mail-enable it simultaneously. Otherwise, the Active Directory administrator can create the group, and you can mail-enable it. Pay attention to the shell commands generated by the console on the completion page of the wizard. OK, let's get started. We're going to mail-enable the universal group in the Marketing OU. The group exists already and contains all the users in the Marketing OU. Let's just select the group. Nothing needs to change on this page, so let's confirm these settings. The summary page allows us to verify the settings. If they look correct, we can create the group. The Enable Distribution Group command was used to create the group because it already existed in Active Directory. Now let's look at creating a dynamic distribution group. Again using the console, dynamic distribution groups were introduced in Exchange Server 2003. They do not have a fixed membership list as regular groups have. Rather, their membership is determined at the point of routing. The Hub Transport Server executes the stored LDAP query and determines the current membership from the results of that query. The query can be simple, such as all users in a certain OU, or as complex as you need. In essence, you're creating a filter of the recipients, and the results of the filter is deemed the membership of the group for routing purposes. We'll create a simple filter for our group. Let's start by launching the wizard. Let's create a group called Tailspin Toy Sales. Northwind Traders has a sister company, Tailspin Toys. Contacts exist in the Tailspin Toys OU that represent sales users in Tailspin Toys. All the other sales users are the sales OUs. Let's use the wizard to configure a dynamic group for contacts in the Tailspin Toys OU. We don't need to configure any conditions on the conditions page, so we'll click Next. Finally, we'll create the group. Then we'll click Finish to complete the process. OK, let's look at removing and disabling recipients. As with other tasks, if you lack Active Directory permissions, you can only disable mailboxes, groups and contacts. If you're both an Exchange administrator and an Active Directory administrator, you can remove these recipients. We'll start by removing a mailbox. We'll remove Carrie's mailbox and the underlying Active Directory account. Then we confirm the action. Now let's disable a mailbox. Again, we'll use another sales user, this time Douglas Curran. And we confirm that action too. OK, let's return to the presentation. Let's return to the agenda. In this section, we'll look at the server roles and how you can use the Exchange Management Console to administer them. Let's take a look at how you can administer each of these roles. Before we look at administering server roles, let's have a quick reminder about what they are. There are basically two types of server roles. One designed to be deployed in the perimeter network outside the corporate intranet with no access to Active Directory, and a group of server roles designed to be installed inside the intranet with access to Active Directory. The server in the perimeter network, called an Edge Transport Server, is isolated from Active Directory and functions as a message hygiene and routing engine. It's responsible for filtering messages as they arrive from untrusted networks, like the internet. Although it's not part of your Active Directory forest, to ensure that it can deliver messages to the correct recipient, it needs access to Active Directory information, which is provided by an instance of ADAM installed locally and synchronized with an instance within your intranet. This role can't be combined with others, as that would compromise security to some extent. Connectors are used to route messages to and from the intranet. Message routing within the intranet or between trusted organizations is handled by the hub transport server. This role can be combined with others when required. The client access server role enables non-MAPI clients like POP, IMAP, and Outlook Anywhere to connect to Exchange. It functions like a front-end server does in 2003, without all the mailbox and routing elements to slow things down. The mailbox server is more like the traditional Exchange server that we saw in 2003, with an information store and associated public and private stores. However, it doesn't handle non-MAPI client access or message routing, as these are handled by other roles. By breaking a single server into distinct functional units, storage, routing and access, the system works better, with a server able to focus on a given task. The Unified Messaging Server is all new and lets you combine emails with voicemail and fax services. When you install a Unified Messaging Server, you give your users a unified inbox. It links your PBX system with Exchange, handles voice calls, provides answering services, as well as providing voicemail. Let's take a look at how you could administer each of these roles. The Edge Transport Server provides the foundation for a secure messaging environment. You configure transport rules on the Edge Transport Server that provide message filtering. Filtering enables the Edge Transport Server to help eliminate spam, viruses, and other unsafe content, providing an improved message hygiene before it arrives within your organization. To allow messages to flow to and from the organization, you'll also need to configure connectors to the hub transport servers in your forest. Because the Edge Transport Server is a standalone, you need a customized version of the Exchange Management Console. This is run locally at the Edge server. Now let's look at the hub transport server. The hub transport server provides message categorization, routing, and delivery within Exchange Server organization. In addition to the connectors that you define on the Edge Transport Server, you must define connectors on the Hub Transport Server. Exchange Server uses the connectors to route messages between the appropriate Edge Transport Server and other Hub Transport Servers. You can also configure the Hub Transport Server with transport rules. These transport rules consist of conditions, actions, and exceptions that filter all messages and determine what action to take on each message. Filtering enables the Hub Transport Server to provide improved message hygiene for messages within your organization. By using transport rules, you can create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content does not enter or leave your organization. You can also use transport rules to maintain regulatory conformance. Generally, the most administration of the transport role is done from the organization work center. Next, we have the mailbox server role. The mailbox server role hosts storage groups and stores. The default first storage group contains a mailbox store and a public store. Typically, you'll use a console to manage storage group and store properties. You can add, remove, mount, and dismount stores, and all the related storage management tasks are accessible from the console. For reliability, the mailbox role also supports local continuous replication, or LCR. This provides a local replica of a storage group. LCR copies any changes to the storage group, such as delivery of messages to the associate store to the replica. The transaction logs for a storage group contain a history of all the changes made to the associated stores. A process known as log shipping synchronizes both copies of a storage group. You can use the console to create and manage local copies of storage groups. Clustered Continuous Replication, CCR, uses log shipping to maintain a copy of a storage group on another server. The mailbox role is the only one that supports clustering in this way. There are some special steps required to establish CCR, but once it's up and running, you can use the console to perform day-to-day administration of the stores. Let's run through the Client Access Server role. From the Server Configuration Work Center, you can click Client Access. From here, you can configure Outlook Web Access for legacy clients, for Exchange 2007 clients, and for public folder access, if they're enabled. You can configure Exchange ActiveSync and the offline address book distribution web. There's even a link to launch a wizard to configure Outlook Anywhere or RPC over HTTPS, as it was previously known. For those of you that set that up in 2003, you know what a big deal this is. A couple of mouse clicks to get RPC over HTTPS functioning. First, a quick word about the unified messaging role. We won't talk in detail about what the unified messaging server role does, but we'll look at the tasks you need to perform to get it operational. First, you need to create a dial plan, the basic unit of administration in unified messaging. It's a telephony extension numbering plan. All users within a dial plan can contact one another with a fixed length extension. Each user has a unique extension within the dial plan. The combination of a dial plan and the user extension uniquely identifies each unified messaging user. Next, you'll need a UPIP gateway object. This represents a physical voice over IP gateway from which a unified messaging server can receive calls. Third, you need to create a hunt group object that relates to the physical hunt group configured at the PBX to direct calls to a voice over IP gateway. The hunt group includes a pilot number as the identifier. An IP gateway object contains hunt groups. You can associate one or more hunt groups with a voice over IP gateway. The pilot number dictates the appropriate dial plan for a given call coming to the voice over IP gateway with multiple hunt groups. Next, you must associate a unified messaging mailbox policy with a dial plan. When you create a policy, you can define policy properties, such as the maximum greeting length, the number of unsuccessful login attempts before the unified messaging server resets the password, the minimum digits required in a personal identification number, PIN, and restrictions on the international calling. You can define unified messaging mailbox policies for distinct groups of users that have different voice messaging requirements, such as departments. Then the mailboxes must be unified messaging enabled to be able to access unified messaging services. You must use the Exchange Management Shell to enable a user for unified messaging. Each user mailbox must be associated with a unified messaging mailbox policy and a unique extension number. Finally, before the unified messaging server can answer or process incoming calls, you must add the unified messaging server to the unified messaging dial plan. To administer unified messaging, use the Organization Configuration Work Center. Now let's run through a demo on managing server roles. In this demo, we'll look at creating a storage group, a store, and configuring LCR. We'll also look at restricting attachment handling for OWA through the client access server role. Let's perform a server administrative task now. We're going to create a new mailbox store. First, that will create a new storage group. We locate the server. Next, we choose the Manage Mailbox role and then click New Storage Group. Enter the name, Third Storage Group, and then click New to create it. Then we select the storage group from the work pane that we want to add the store to. We'll use the newly created third storage group. Next, we click the exposed link in the action pane and create the store. We'll use the mailbox database 3, a couple more clicks and it's created. There are a number of settings we can configure for the client access role. For example, we can configure Microsoft Office Outlook Web Access Attachment Handling. Let's see how. First, we open the client access role, and from the action pane, we view the properties of the OWA default website. Let's take a look at the public computer file access settings. Let's just clear these checkboxes. That will prevent file access from public computers. We'll do the same for access from private computers. Let's test that from OWA. Now we'll log into Microsoft Office Outlook Web Access as John Woods and make sure that worked. We'll select the language and then we are logged on. Let's open this message. The yellow bar at the top indicates that OWA has blocked the attachment. Let's take a look at how quickly and easily you can enable local continuous replication. We'll perform this task from the console. Navigate to the Server Configuration Work Center and use an Action Pane Manage Mailbox role to jump to the right place. Click the Action Pane link to enable local continuous backup. We need to specify a path for system files first. Then we need to specify a path for the system files. Finally, we need to define a location for the existing databases within the storage group. Remember that LCR operates at the storage group level by using log shipping. Microsoft recommended that you only define one database per storage group. So in essence, LCR operates on the database level, if you think of it like that. Then we complete the processes. To verify, we can use Windows Explorer to check for the presence of the database and log files. They're all present, so that appears to have been successful. Let's return to the presentation. Let's move on, but first a quick look at the agenda. You can configure four things within the Organizational Configuration Work Center. These are hub transport settings, such as transport rules, mailbox server settings, such as email lifecycle folders, unified messaging centers, and client access settings. Let's take a look at some of these. Transport rules, once created, can be enabled or disabled, and enabled in test mode. The Bridgehead Flow Control Agent uses transport rules to filter and process messages in transit through your organization. You can configure enable transport rules using the shell or console. Rules have three scopes that determine which messages are affected by the rule. Internal, agents filter messages from inside your organization only. External, agents filter messages from outside your organization only. And global, agents filter all messages. When you've determined the scope of the rule, you must configure the conditions. These define which messages are caught by the filter. Conditions include being sent to or from certain people, being sent to or from members of a distribution list, or featuring specific words or text patterns in the subject, body, or message header. Next, you define the actions. These define what will happen to the messages that have been caught in the filter. Actions include silently dropping the message, redirecting the message to a specified address, copying or blind copying the message to a specified address, or logging the event. Finally, the exceptions. These define messages that should not have the actions performed on them, but that were caught by the defined conditions of the filter. For example, by using the copy or blind copy action, you can create an archive of messages as they travel through your organization. As part of your corporate messaging policy, you may be required to implement a message storage and retrieval policy. A number of features exist within the Exchange server to support this requirement, including the email lifecycle. The email lifecycle handles messages at rest, that is, not currently in transit through your organization. When you implement email lifecycle folders, also known as organizational folders, the mailbox server is responsible for the archive process. You can use either the Exchange Management Console or the Exchange Management Shell to implement email lifecycle folders. To configure organizational folders and settings, you use the mailbox object in the Organizational Configuration Work Center. Let's run through the other demo, this one on creating a transport rule. In this demo, we'll see how to create a transport rule to archive a copy of a message to a designated user. Finally, we'll review the Best Practices Analyzer. It's located in the toolbox. Let's go and load it. It takes a moment to load because another MMC console is loading with the Best Practice Analyzer snap-in loaded. Let's define the properties of our scan. First, we'll define the domain controller that's connected to. SMBEX01 is already selected to the DC, so let's connect to that. We enter an identifying label and then set a scan to perform a quick health check. That's going to take a few minutes to run, and obviously a full health and performance check would take considerably longer. Once the test is completed, we can review the report. Click the link to view the report. We select the full issues report. There are several issues, some are minor and some are more serious, as indicated by the warning signals. Let's look at the backup issue, which includes a recommendation for avoiding the problem. Well, that's a serious problem in production system. It's a good idea to perform regular backup operations. Let's return to the presentation. Let's return to the agenda. The toolbox contains 8 tools: the Best Practices Analyzer, the Database Recovery Management Tool, and the Database Troubleshooter, the Exchange Queue Viewer, the Message Tracking Tool, and the Mailflow Troubleshooter, the Exchange Server Performance Monitor, and the Performance Troubleshooter. Let's take a look at some of them. First, let's have a look at the Best Practices Analyzer. This utility lets you produce a report detailing your Exchange Server configuration. The analyzer compares a number of settings with the current Microsoft best practices. You can view these reports that highlight areas that require your attention. Reports include recommendations about how to resolve issues. You can perform a number of standard scans using the Best Practices Analyzer. These are health check, permission check, a connectivity test, and a baseline report mode. It's a good idea to run the utility after commissioning a server, as well as on a periodic basis to ensure that the server is functioning correctly. You are probably already pretty familiar with the importance of measuring server performance on a regular basis. The toolbox contains a handy link to the Windows System Monitor with pre-selected objects and counters. These counters include messages sent and received per second, memory pages per second, and the number of RPC counters, the percent processor time counter, and the information store local delivery rate. These counters probably give a reasonable indication of snapshot server performance. However, it's generally better to collect statistics into a log file using the performance log and alert snap-in, and analyzing the collected data later. Finally, let's look at the queue viewer. One of the problems with previous versions of Exchange System Manager was locating the message queues. For those of you who've been around Exchange long enough, you'll remember that in Exchange 5, the queues were listed on the property sheet of the message transfer agent. In Exchange 2000, the queue viewer moved to the element of the hierarchy between the protocol object, such as SMTP. And in Exchange Server 2003, it moved slightly again, this time as a subcomponent of the server object. Now it's located in a link off the toolbox, so it's easy to find. There are 3 types of queues in Exchange 2007. The local delivery queue contains messages that are awaiting delivery to users homed within the same site as a hub transport server servicing the queue. The submission queue contains messages that are submitted to the exchange organization through SMTP receive, the pickup directory, or the store driver. These messages are sent to the categorizer. The remote delivery queue contains messages that are being routed to the recipients at the same destination, and the queue exists for each destination. On an edge server, these destinations are external SMTP domains. On a hub server, these destinations are outside the Active Directory site, in which the hub server is located. The list of queues and messages can be quite large. The number of queues and the number of messages in each will change constantly as messages flow in and out of the server. Now let's have a look at the Best Practice Analyzer in the last of our demos. In this demo, we'll use the Best Practice Analyzer to perform a simple health check on a server. Finally, we'll review the Best Practices Analyzer. It's located in the toolbox. Let's go and load it. It takes a moment to load because another MMC console is loading with the Best Practice Analyzer snap-in loaded. Let's define the properties of our scan. First, we'll define the domain controller that's connected to. SMBEX01 is already selected to the DC, so let's connect to that. We enter an identifying label and then set a scan to perform a quick health check. that's going to take a few minutes to run, and obviously a full health and performance check would take considerably longer. Once the test is completed, we can review the report. Click the link to view the report. We select the full issues report. There are several issues, some are minor and some are more serious, as indicated by the warning signals. Let's look at the backup issue, which includes a recommendation for avoiding the problem. Well, that's a serious problem in production system. It's a good idea to perform regular backup operations. Let's return to the presentation. Let's run through a summary of what we've covered today. During the session, we took a good look at the new Exchange Management Console, built on top of the Exchange Management Shell. It has a streamlined, efficient and simplified interface compared with the earlier Exchange Management tools. We used the console to perform a number of typical administrative tasks, such as managing recipients, creating and managing stores and storage groups, and configuring organizational settings like transport rules. We finished up the session with a look at the toolbox, a single container for useful links to tools, like the Best Practice Analyzer and the Queue Viewer. The Exchange Management Console is a significant step forward in both form and function, and will help make your administrative life easier. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. You can also visit the www.microsoft.com/TechNet/ITProExc105 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Pressbooks, workshops, clinic, and Microsoft Skills Assessment, MOC, is offered in an instructor-led environment and offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals in supporting and implementing solutions using the Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Getting Started with Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Clinic, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There's also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short, 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The Skills Assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft Official Curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and all VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the availability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to go on to become a fully certified systems administrator, MCSA, or system engineer, MCSE, or a desktop specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certifications covers SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about.
TechNet Plus subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. A subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed news groups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions, and through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.